Hello, this is the podcast for our class on September 15. That was class number 6. And in this class, we're entering a whole new topic. So we're leaving behind the question of breach. And I know it's very difficult when you've been talking about facts and reasonable care, this, that, and the other, to suddenly put that aside and adopt a different mentality. But that's what you've got to do now. And I hope that the discussion in class kind of targeted that we're no longer talking about suppose you did this and suppose you did that. That's our reasonable care analysis, and that goes to the question of breach. Now we've taken a step back, and we're looking at duty. And our general rule is you have a duty of reasonable care in your conduct, but otherwise you have no duty to act on behalf of others. And the no duty rule is that you have to keep that in mind, that that's kind of the bedrock rule, unless there's something that establishes a duty. And we're going to talk about ways to establish a duty beyond the four ways that we talked last night. But you've got to just accept the fact that the no duty rule is really at the basis. So we're starting from that premise, no duty to act affirmatively on behalf of others, and then we'll build on that. And even in the further classes, you'll see how strong this impetus is, or how strong the regulation against imposing duty is, because there are a lot of times when you think, even though there is clearly a duty, that the court backs out and says, as a policy matter, we're not going to impose duty here, even though in its conduct, and even though, you know, the courts, we'll see cases where they're just bending over backward. So, you know, keep that in mind. Duty is such a policy question because it's really used to as a barrier to liability. There's no incentive in our system to extend liability, even though I hope you're seeing now how very, very narrow tort liability is and how very difficult it is to find it, because there are many, many policies embedded in our system that says we don't want to extend liability, we don't want to expand it. So duty can be used to, as a policy matter, to extend liability or limit liability. And we'll see it more often limiting liability as a policy matter. So we talked about misfeasance versus nonfeasance. You're liable for doing something improperly, but the question now is, when are you going to be liable for not doing something? And we'll see over and over, defendants kind of bend over backwards. So it wasn't that I was doing something bad. This was just an omission to do something rather than a commission. And you know, keep in mind where the line's drawn on that. I use the example, you know, you're driving and you hit someone. That's misfeasance. It's even though what happened was you didn't, you failed to step on the brake. It's not an omission of stepping on the brake. It's a commission of poor driving. And so you have a duty when you're doing something, a duty of reasonable care. So we started with the case of Harper v. Herman, and that's a good case to start with. It gives you the threshold, I hope, gives you the threshold of how strong the no duty rule is. There was, as a boat owner and as somebody doing a conduct, which is piloting the boat, he had a duty of reasonable care in doing what he was doing. The next question is, did he have a duty to warn this passenger on his boat? And the court quite rightly decided no. It may, confound your sense of what, people should do, but as a matter of legal liability, no, there was no none of the four ways that we've set out that establish a duty were present. There was no special relationship. This person was just a non-paying passenger on the boat. Perhaps if he was a guest, but, you know, we may explore that. He didn't voluntarily assume any duty, any responsibility for the person. He didn't non-negligently create a risk to the person. And he didn't non-negligently injure that person himself. So the mere fact that he failed to, it was an omission, non-feasance, he failed to warn him about the shallow water was not enough to assign a duty, not enough for liability. If there had been a duty, what's the next step? Reasonable care. That's a factual discussion. So Harper v. Herman is a very good threshold case for you to look at. And, you know, feel comfortable. Then we moved over. We looked at the Moke case. We looked at the idea of water. This is part of the water company series of cases where our water company had not provided water to put out a fire, and the homeowner whose house burned down tried to sue the water company for their poor service, basically. And Cardozo here, as I said, issued a very awkward opinion, saying, well, it wasn't the commission of a wrong. It was only the omission to provide the water, right? Not omission versus commission. So it was just a denial of a benefit, not the commission of a wrong. And this, you know, it sounds bogus, and you know, you have to figure what's going on here, because that does sound pretty awkward. But it was the basis for what has been known as the water company cases, and applying to all public utilities. We'll see this in Strauss v. Bell Realty in the next class, that courts are very reluctant to, what they say, open the floodgates, sort of an irony when we're talking about water, open the floodgates to mass amounts of liability. Why? Because they're, you know, protective of public utilities and governments, and there's a lot of immunity that we talk about for certain types of governmental agencies just because we don't want mass liability. But in these cases, we'll see in Strauss, they've come to limit liability based on duty to only those people with whom they have privity of contract. And I spoke of privity of contract. That is just a contractual relationship. Cardozo doesn't talk about it in Moke. He kind of, this omission v. commission, but it's settled down in later cases that in order for a public utility to be responsible, there has to be some contractual relationship, the privity. And you will have heard of privity in your contracts class, I hope. Privity here can be the relationship, can be a relationship that leads to a duty, an affirmative duty of care. So then we did a bunch of hypotheticals, all designed to make sure you understand the distinction between misfeasance and nonfeasance, duty and breach. Don't mush them all together. Keep them very, very much distinct in your mind, because the analysis is different for each of those elements. And it's imperative that you get the concept of what duty is down as distinct from breach at this time, because we're moving along now into the next eight classes are going to be duty. And don't... You know, when you find yourself, I'm going to have to bring you back to the question of duty. When you find yourself talking about what if, it's time to kind of discipline yourself that we've left behind this question of reasonable care, and we're talking, we're focusing now on the matter of law, the policy question, that's a duty. Our threshold question, it's a high barrier to get over. So now we're leaving behind, after this class, we're going to work, we're going to, next class we're talking about the very strange case of what makes a special relationship. And don't get caught up in the Farwell v. Keaton majority language about friends out on a social venture making a special relationship. It's not necessary. He has that court there gives two reasons for a duty to arise, and think about how unnecessary their language on special relationship. Look very critically at this case, because I want to encourage you not to suddenly think that a social relationship gives rise to a special relationship that gives rise to duty, because it's not that way. Hi. Okay, next class we're going to start with Farwell v. Keaton, doing my podcast. Yeah, I couldn't read you.